So today we are commemorating, as I mentioned before, the disappearance day of two great personalities, Jiva Goswami and Jagadish Pandit. Quickly, I'll go over Jagadish Pandit. So, Om Gana Timidandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Jagadish Pandit and his brother, Haranya, actually known in Krishna Leela as the Nagapatnis. In Chaitanya Leela, of course, they served Lord Chaitanya in different ways. There's that interesting story when Lord Chaitanya was young during the Ekadasi. He was begging for some grains that were offered by Jagadish and Haranya. And his mother said, "How do you know that?" And then they took him to Jagadish and Haranya's house. And there were the grains offered to the deity. And Lord Chaitanya took those grains. So that was one instance when Lord Chaitanya was very young. Jagadish Pandit also was known for worshipping Lord Jagannath. That's why it's called Jagadish, Jagannath. And he used to carry around Lord Jagannath with a stick, on a stick, you know, like a long stick, and it was hanging from the stick. And that stick is still there today. You can see that stick. You gone to see the stick? No. What's the use? So he went. So the stick is still there, and let's see, where is the stick now? I'll tell you in a second. Yashoda Gram. That's where the stick is. And every year, Jagadish Pandit would accompany the other devotees to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the time of the Rath Yatra. And he was also present at the Panihati festival of Lord Nityananda and Raghunath Das Goswami. Okay. That's the information we have about Jagadish Pandit. And the 13th day after the full moon of the month of Posha marks the passing of Sri Jagadish Pandit Prabhu, and that's today. So, and then we'll spend the majority of the time talking about Srila Jiva Goswami, who is one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Of course, he is the youngest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He's, of course, first we want to welcome all the devotees joining us. We've got a lot of devotees today. We got Adi Dev, Ashi Gutierrez, Shika Singh from Melbourne, Owen Maher, Jayanstri, Elina, who I'm going to be seeing in a few days, Danyeshi from Sydney, Bhagavat, Bajagovinda from Sydney, Jayaradhika from Sydney, Chamasaki from the farm in Australia, New Governor. So we got people from all over. And now we even have people from the United States here in this house. Okay, so talking about Jiva Goswami, we want to wish everybody Happy New Year, because it's already the Happy New Year in Australia. They're a day later. So we're on the other side of the international dateline. So Srila Jiva Goswami, of course, he was the nephew of Rupam and Sanatan Goswami and the son of Anupama. Anupama was their brother who was a devotee of Lord Ramchandra. So he would always chant Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Raghupati Raghava, Rajan Ram, Pati Tapavana, Sita Ram, and his brothers, that is Rupam Sanatan. They tried to convince him just to chant Hare Krishna, but he couldn't do that. And then they praised him that he was so loyal to his worshipful Ishtadev. That means Lord Ramchandra. So, anyway, so Anupama passed away at an early age. But his son was... Don't turn off the heat, please.
I just turned it down.
Oh, please.
Ooh.
Now,
do you
need
it up?
Yeah, because I got a little cough. I don't want to get sick. So.
Sure.
I'll try to speak louder, because this isn't working today. So, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'll try to speak.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. So, turn up my volume, since the volume on this isn't working. Well, she has to work on the cookies. So anyway, Jiva Goswami, he was the youngest, and it's described that he had, when Lord Chaitanya went to Ramakeli to see Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, he was a little baby. And so he had darshan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was actually left with his mother because his uncle and uncles and his father, they actually went to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was just left with his mother. And it's described that Jiva Goswami had a golden complexion. So this is one of the signs of someone. Of course, there's different physical signs that a great personality called the Mahapurusha has. Even when they're born, their eyes are like lotuses. And of course, I joke about this many times, that generally, whether we're in India or in the Western world, our eyes are little beady marbles. But the... And actually in India, sometimes they use this cudgel and other things to make the eyes seem like they're lotuses. But they're not. It's cheating. So, so the eyes are like lotuses, the hands go down to the knees when they're standing up, and different portions or proportions of the body are perfectly formed. And you don't see this nowadays in practically anyone, whether they're from India or whatever. But this is a sign of Mahapurush. So from his very birth, he was worshipping Radha Krishna deities, and he was always feeling separation from his father and uncles, who were actually great pure devotees of the Lord. And he had dreams many times of dancing with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Finally, after his uncles went to Vrindavan and his father passed away, he went to Navadvip to see Lord Nityananda. And they met at Srivas Thakur's house. The next day, Sachimata had such a maternal affection towards Jiva Goswami, because he was very young, he was a teenager at that particular time, that she fed him personally. She cooked for him and fed him. And then Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami on the Navadvip Dham Parikrama. So he showed him everything in Navadvipa, in other words, all the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Can you hear me all right back there now? Okay, I'm trying to be louder. He showed him all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvipa Dham. And then Lord Nityananda, after he was finished giving Jiva Goswami a tour, he sent Jiva Goswami to Kashi. Now, you may ask, why did he send him to Kashi? Because Kashi is a place of Mayavadis, impersonalists. But at Kashi, there was an individual named Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And so, in other words, it was important for Srila Jiva Goswami to get the education in Sanskrit, grammar, and rhetoric, and logic, and all these other things, so that he could later on exhibit the pastimes of being the greatest philosopher of all time. And actually he's admitted to be so by different scholars in India, and anyone who studied Indian philosophy understands that, especially when they study Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbhas, which we're going to talk about in a second. What are the Shat Sandarbhas? What do they discuss? So there's even departments in the universities in India, of course, that are specifically dedicated to Jiva Goswami's study, or the study of Jiva Goswami's work. So then after studying with Madhusudana Vachaspati, he went to Vrindavan to join Rupa and Sanatana. And he was like considered to be like their younger brother, or actually he was their nephew, but they treated him like their younger brother. And Radha Damodar, the deities of Radha Damodar is very interesting, were personally fashioned by Srila Rupa Goswami. In other words, he designed the deities. He designed the deities. I don't know if he actually personally, you know, made the deities, but he designed the deities and he gave them to Srila Jiva Goswami. It's pretty interesting. That's where Radha Damodar came from. And of course, the Radha Damodar temple is the temple in which Srila Prabhupada had his eternal residence, or has his eternal residence. That's where Srila Prabhupada planned to come to the Western world. He was finishing up the Bhagavatam, first canto of the Bhagavatam. And there's some stories that in the neighboring temple they would hear crying at night. And they would look over the wall, or they'd come in, and then they see Srila Prabhupada crying, "O Rupa, O Sanatan," because of the Bhajan Kutirs and the Samadhi there. So they're praying, "O Rupa, O Sanatan," and praying for the potency to carry out his spiritual master's mission. Actually, I was reading this interesting biography, new biography about Srila Prabhupada, and it's there's one story about when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was giving a darshan, and then the devotee who was narrating this, who was there, he described that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked over at Prabhupada, was like looking, like not just glancing, but practically staring at Prabhupada, and then he's predicted that someone will go to one of my followers will go to the Western world and preach Krishna consciousness. Pretty interesting, isn't it? It's a biography by Yogeshwara. You got it as a gift? Well, I got it as a gift too. So we're equal. So anyway, so it's a very wonderful biography, and a lot of details that weren't there in the previous biographies. So getting back to the point, so Prabhupada resided in the Radha Damodara temple, and there's many stories about him in the Radha Damodara temple. Before the Radha Damodara temple, he resided in the Vamsi Gopal temple, which is a very small place. And then he would go to Delhi to preach Krishna consciousness and then come back at night, because Prabhupada didn't have the money to reside in Delhi. It was too expensive. So it was cheaper for him. He had to take a tanga, which is a horse-drawn cart. He had to take a tanga to Mathura and then take this hellacious train ride in third class to Delhi. I don't know if any of you ever traveled third class in India. I have. I had to travel in the baggage compartment one time in India, because there was no room in the third class. You know, everybody was just like piled on top of each other, hanging out the doors. You know about this. Actually, people hang out the doors this much from the trains, and hundreds of people die each year in the trains. You know, Indian trains are not a joke, and even when you get an air-conditioned car, they turn down the temperature so much it makes it seem like a summer day here in North Carolina. You know, they think air conditioner means like 0 degrees centigrade, or 32 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, it's just like, huh? And so all the travel in those days was done by train. Anyway, so Prabhupada would travel every day, or, you know, once or twice or three times a week, go through all this and distribute a few back to Godheads, and he wouldn't even make enough money to pay for his train fare. That was Prabhupada executing austerities. Anyway, so Prabhupada resided at the Radha Damodara temple, and Srila Jiva Goswami was given the service by Rupa and Sanatan to proofread their books. In other words, check the punctuation and check the meter and everything like that, because many of these literatures were written in a specific Sanskrit meter. And then also he rendered menial service to Rupa and Sanatan. So eventually he accepted Rupa Goswami as his guru. And there's an interesting story of how Rupa Goswami sort of apparently kicked him out of Vrindavan for some time. There was this conquering pandit, his name was Rupa Narayan, interesting, Rupa also. Rupa Narayan, he was going all over India, in fact, and he heard about the great scholars, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan, so he thought, you know, if I could defeat them and get something called the Jaya Patra. Patra means like a leaf or a paper. And also there's a type of vegetable called a patra, where they wrap in a leaf, you know, some some other things. It's very delicious, anyway. So Jayapatra means the victory paper. You know, you have won this particular argument. Nowadays, of course, they have trophies, statues. You go into different people's houses. Actually, when I'm visiting people's houses, everyone has these trophies on their mantelpiece. And usually it's like cricket or golf or some stupid thing like that. Sorry. So Rupen Narayan, he wanted to get a Jayapatra from Rupen Sanatan Goswami. So he went and challenged them to an argument. And they didn't want to really waste their time with this nonsense person. So what happened is that they just signed the certificate. Okay, you won. Get out of here. Just leave us alone. So he was bragging, this Rupen Narayan, he was bragging, you know, I have defeated Rupen Sanatan Goswami. And basically, Jiva Goswami heard this. And he said, all right, let's see if you can defeat me. So for 7 days, they had an argument. And he defeated this Rupa Narayan so much that Rupa Narayan actually had a call of nature. I don't think I need to describe what that is. It's not that nature said, come here. It's just like, you know, call of nature. You know, he was not toilet trained. So, and then what happened is that Rupa Goswami got so upset because Jiva Goswami went there and said, look, I defeated him. And Rupa Goswami said, I guess you took sannyasa too early in age. Because anyone who's proud of his learning or proud of anything is not qualified to be a sannyasi. So therefore, get out of Vrindavan. You're not qualified to live in Vrindavan. So Jiva, this is very heavy for Jiva Goswami because you have to see the relationship in those days between, of course, they were family members and also guru like that. And the guru saying, get out, I don't want to see you now, you know. That's a very heavy thing to hear from your spiritual master. So Jiva Goswami was necessarily and very depressed. And so we went to Mathura outside of Vrindavan. And it's described he lived in a hollow of a tree, just like chanting Hare Krishna and lamenting about what he had done. So what happened is that after, I think it was almost a year or something like that, that Sanatan Goswami asked Rupa Goswami, you know, where's Jiva? And Rupa Goswami explained what happened. And Sanatan Goswami said to Rupa Goswami, you are actually forgetting one of the main precepts or teachings of our master, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Rupa Goswami was thinking, what am I forgetting? You know, of course, the main precepts are Namaruchi and Jivadoya. Namaruchi means having a taste for the holy names, and Jivadoya means being compassionate to the Jiva souls. So there's another way of understanding Jivadoya. Jivadoya can also mean being compassionate to Jiva Goswami. And Rupa Goswami understood this, and then he brought Jiva Goswami back. And so later on, of course, when Rupa and Sanatan passed away, Jiva Goswami was still there. And generally, with many of his disciples, he taught them something called the Swakya Ras with Krishna rather than the Parikya Ras. Now, Swakya means that Krishna and Radharani are married. And Parikya means they're not married. That Radharani is actually married to Abhimanyu, who is basically ontologically an expansion of Krishna. But this Abhimanyu, he never comes in contact with Radharani, even though he's married, even though he tries to, you know, be kind to her and have a close relationship with her. She's not interested in him. Just an official marriage. So he's teaching, Jiva Goswami is teaching that Radha and Krishna are married. It's not illicit. Of course, never illicit. It's not unalloyed, lawless love. It's something that's just like normal. And so he taught this because his disciples were not, many of his disciples were not advanced enough to understand this Parikya. Just like When we worship Radha and Krishna, we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi and Narayan. In other words, we have Radha Krishna on the altar, that's for sure, but the mood is Lakshmi and Narayan. Not that we're thinking, Krishna, you know, you should run away with Radharani tonight or something like that. Or, I mean, just like there's one temple, I won't mention the name, in India, where they say the deities ran off the altar in the middle of the night, and that's why they can only open up the curtains for 1 second. You know, of course, that's a good tourist draw. You know, of course, that makes the temple very famous. In India, if you make some rumor about something, then everyone will flock to the temple. You make up some story, isn't it? I mean, that's just the normal way. In India, people like mystical things, curses, and everything like that. So you got to make everything like very mystical. I mean, it's like if you look at the Mahabharata, it's filled with curses, unusual births. Nobody's born in a normal way. You know, people pop out of pots, you know, or the demigods come down and have them. I'm not saying it didn't happen. All I'm saying is this is like the standard in India, you know, or blessings. Everybody wants Ashivad, give me car blessings, give me the dust from your feet. I mean, all these things. I mean, it's just, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's the mood. So, so we worship Radha and Krishna in a very reverent way in the altar. And just like we have Radharani giving her blessings like that. And of course, some of the deities of Radharani's dancing like that too. But however, it's the mood of Radha and Krishna, the mood of Lakshmi and Narayan that we worship. And just on reverence, don't forget that Krishna's God. You shouldn't forget Krishna's God. Unless you happen to be like on a very elevated platform, you know, have realized your eternal relationship with the Lord, that's fine. But most of us are pretty much down to earth. So anyway, so he taught Swakya to his disciples, and therefore sometimes people criticize, you know, he wasn't on the highest spot, but he was on the higher platform. So in order to construct the temple, actually he arranged for many temples to be constructed, even some of the other Goswami's temples to be constructed, because he had a very close relationship with Akbar. Akbar was a very liberal Muslim, but he wanted to bring all the different religions together so they could all work together and not be fighting or whatever. Of course, there wasn't so much fighting at that time, but at least, of course, the Mughals were fighting. He wanted unity. And so he was studying different religions. He would meet every few nights with all the great sages from different religions and try to come up with something that they could amalgamate and come up with one religion. So Akbar was very friendly with Jiva Goswami, and he gave Akbar a vision in this place called Nidivan. Nidivan means a sleeping forest. Van means, because Van, that's how you pronounce in Bengali, so Van would be in Hindi or in Sanskrit. So Nidivan means the sleeping temp. There's a forest in Vrindavan called Nidivan, and then they actually have a bed for Radha and Krishna at the far end of the forest. Anyone's been there? Yeah. Nidivan. So he gave Akbar a vision, and I don't know what that vision was, but Akbar was able to perceive Radha and Krishna in Nidivan. Pretty good. A Muslim able to do that. And so Akbar then began to supply money and all sorts of goods to build the temples of the Goswamis. Pretty good, isn't it? And let's see. Then he had a debate in Agra that which is more glorious, the Jamuna or the Ganges? And he won the debate by saying that Jamuna was more glorious because she is the consort of Krishna and she gives bhakti. And so he got another Jayapatra for that. And he got a promise by Akbar, because Akbar, you know, in spite of being open to all the different religions, he used to go hunting a lot. So he said, don't hunt in Braj. So Akbar said, I will hunt everywhere else, kill animals anywhere else, but not in Braj. He also was the instructing guru for Shaimananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srinivasacharya. Very interesting, isn't it? So very important person. He appeared approximately in 1513 A.D. and left approximately in 1598 A.D. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the Shandarvas, the Shatshandarvas. There's six of them. So beginning, see how much time we have, not much. The first one is called the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Bhagavat Sandarbha is the Shat Sandarbha. So the first one is called the Tattva Sandarbha. And of course, Tattva means the truth or something that is, the category of category or truth, or something that is irrefutable. And the Tattva Sandarbha deals with what we call epistemology. Epistemology means, how do you know what you know? So it shows that the Bhagavatam is the most authoritative evidence directly pointing to the absolute truth. And this is actually very important too, because when we're dealing with so many other scriptures that may have been tampered with or have been tampered with through the ages, like the Mahabharata, we always defer to the Bhagavatam. Like the Mahabharata has 60 or 80 different renditions, depending on what part of India Mahabharata is from. And nobody can really understand nowadays where or what is the original story of the Mahabharata. The basic story is always the same, but the details are different, such as when Parashara Muni and Satyavati had a kid. Did they have it on an island in the river, or did they get married? All these things change. All different from one Mahabharata. And even Madhvacharya in his Tatparata Nirnaya, he comments that the Mahabharata has actually been corrupted in many ways. That's even Madhvacharya, a great acharya in our disciplic succession. So Jiva Goswami established that the Bhagavatam is the quintessential or the topmost understanding of Vaishnava philosophy, should be accepted absolutely. And the Bhagavatam has been untouched throughout the years, being passed down in disciplic succession. So that's very important. The second Sandarbha is called the Bhagavat Sandarbha, and it draws a distinction between the impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. It describes the spiritual world, the modes of nature in this material world, deity worship, how Krishna is all pervasive, gives shelter to everyone, his manifestations, form, quality, pastimes, etc. Third Sandarbha is called the Paramatma Sandarbha. And there, of course, obviously you have a description of the super soul and the different incarnations, especially the Purusha avatars. There's also a discussion about the Leela avatars and the six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that are described by Parashara Muni: strength, beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. And the fourth one is called Krishna Sandarbha. And therefore, Krishna is proved in this Sandarbha to be the source of all the other incarnations. And it talks about his pastimes, descriptions of Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan, the Yadavas, the queens of Dwarka, the gopis, and there's a list of the gopis' names in this particular Sandarbha. And then, of course, ultimately, the description of Srimati Radharani's topmost position. Fifth one is called the Bhakti Sandarbha, and this is about devotional service, how to reach or understand yourself through bhakti, differences between the Mahabhagavat, ordinary devotees, Majjhima Adhikaris, Raghunuga Bhakti, if anyone's interested in that, and a study of other perfectional stages in devotional service. And finally, the last one is called Priti Sandarbha, and that talks about love. So you talk about the liberated position of the personalist and the impersonalist, And real liberation is loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then there's a discussion of all the rasas, rasabhas, overlapping rasas, enjoyment and separation, and ultimately it ends with the description of the glories of Srimati Radharani. So these sandarbhas are very, very important. The Tattva Sandarbha has been published already in ISKCON, and this is very detailed in terms of establishing the Bhagavatam's preeminence or predominance amongst all the literatures. There's another book that I've been working on right now. We're doing a narration, a very large book by Jiva Goswami. It's called Gopal Champu. I don't know if any of you heard of this book. But right now, we're up to about the 25th chapter in there, doing a narration. And of course, we haven't put the narrations out on the internet yet, but basically, yeah, I guess if anyone's interested, we could put some of them out already. But it's up to about the 25th chapter. And what the Gopal Champa does, it's sort of like a takeoff of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Something like the Ananda Vrindavan Champu by Kavi Karnapur. There's also the narration of that is available on iskandesiretree.com or net. And we've done the whole narration of the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. Ananda Vrindavan Champu takes the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and really elaborates on all the different details. I mean, it just goes into the realization, elaboration of the rasas and the personalities and what really happened in each chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Ananda Vrindavan Champu. And the Gopal Champu is similar. It really goes into a lot of depth about Krishna's pastimes and interactions and funny interactions or double entendres. Probably none of you know what that means. Double entendre means you can say something that means two or three different things. Double means two, of course. Between Radha and Krishna, like where Radharani asks, where's your vas? You know, referring to Krishna's clothes, and Krishna takes that, you know, about residence, or where did Yamini Mushati, where did you spend the night? And it can also be taken as, did night steal something? You know, so there's different, in Sanskrit is, because Jiva Goswami and the Goswamis were quite expert in Sanskrit, I mean, perfectly expert, they were able to, like, use Sanskrit poetry to, let's say, elaborate on Krishna's interactions with the gopis in a very humorous, tricky way. So this is what's going on in the Gopal Champu. It's a very wonderful book, but it takes a lot of concentration. It's a very big book. It's about this big, this thick. Many, many chapters. That's why it's taking me a long time to go through it, and I haven't had time to work on it for a long time because life is such. All right, so any questions about Jiva Goswami? Jiva Goswami? No? No questions about Jiva Goswami? So today we should remember Jiva Goswami and follow in the footsteps. All these personalities, just one other thing is, they're acharyas. Acharya means not that, oh, they're so great, we worship them. That's there too. But they are so great. What are they showing us by their example that we should do? Like Prabhupada. Prabhupada's so great. So what we find in many religions is that they push the great saints and they push the incarnations of God or could push the Son of God so high that he becomes impossible to relate to except that you just worship him and then you do your own nonsense. That's really what happens in most religions. And it's happened in Krishna consciousness too. In our movement that we're pushing Prabhupada higher, higher, higher. I mean, Prabhupada is higher, 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 obviously. But we put him so much up there that, you know, oh yeah, everybody's fallen, everybody's a sinner. You know, like here in the Christian church, nobody can be a guru in the Krishna consciousness, you know, the Rishik stuff. Nobody can be a guru. Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada will save me, even though I'm smoking marijuana, because I'm fallen. Everyone is a sinner. You find the same dynamic occurring in ISKCON even today. So Prabhupada's acharya. Acharya means someone who we should follow. Not imitate. Anusar, anukar. Not imitate, but follow in the footsteps and take his example insofar as possible with our realization. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank everybody for watching. Oh, Elaine is watching from Europe. Oh my God. You should be in Paris enjoying yourself now.